I'm Marissa Norcross.
And I'm Dave Freud, so this must be The Next Page. Hey, Marissa.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going terrific. Because last week we talked about how attitude controls or affects so much of our life, so I'm choosing to have a terrific attitude today.
Good, me too.
Because everything is better.
Mm-hmm.
But we are talking about my blog post from this morning that talked about when leadership fails.
Right, and we're talking about a pretty historic failure.
We are. So we're going to just jump right into it. So the post that I wrote this morning really says that, you know, for years I kept thinking that my greatest leadership failures were things like not valuing people, maybe reacting harshly, those type of things, or not building my team, not growing my team. And the reality is that I think the worst leadership failure that I had and that I see in leaders, as I'm working with a lot of folks, is just the failure to embrace reality.
Mm-hmm.
They just seem to think that for whatever reason, and we'll get into what some of those might be toward the end, that what they see isn't really going to happen. And so they just think that there's a better outcome ahead. And so when I was thinking about people failing to face reality, I thought of the Titanic. And as I did a little bit of research into this, there is absolutely no reason why the Titanic should have sank. It was designed, and so it was the creation of a naval architect whose name was Thomas Andrews Jr. He was 39 years old. The ship really should have been unsinkable. It had 16 compartments in its hull that could be sealed off and made watertight remotely, which if you think about, you know, we're talking about 1912.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm shocked that but there must have been some mechanical type of levers that they could pull to get these bulkheads to seal up. The ship was designed in such a way that it could continue sailing with four of those watertight chambers filled with water, well, five filled.
Hmm.
And as I started looking into what really went wrong, all of the things that went wrong could have been avoided. So let me look at, start going through it with you.
Yeah.
And I sent you, because again, as it was last week when we recorded last week's, I'm quite far away. So I'm down in Virginia still, but I've sent this up to you so you could look at it.
Mm-hmm.
They ignored warnings. There were six iceberg warnings that radio operator Jack Phillips did not pass. He passed on five out of the six, but the last one he didn't pass on, which was the clearest warning. But all the other warnings that he passed on to Captain Edward Smith, Smith just disregarded because he said, "My ship is not susceptible to icebergs. It's not a problem."
Right. And that's something that happens all the time. We ignore warning signs all the time.
Yeah, we think, you know what, our company's stronger than that. Our employees are smarter than that. This really can't happen.
We think it's impossible, or we're in denial.
Mm-hmm. We're in denial. And so, to be honest with you on this one, as I did some research, so what really happened? Well, what happened was his ship should have been able to withstand icebergs. But he should have been, so a lot of folks that have looked at the naval architecture, the design of the Titanic, some say had they hit the iceberg head on, it would have been fine.
Huh.
But they didn't. They hit it on the just behind the bow on the starboard or the right side of the ship. The problem was that they raced, so the Titanic was the second out of three Olympic class steamers to be built that year for the for this particular shipping company. They were rushing to finish the boats, and they didn't have the right type of rivets, so they used substandard metal rivets that had slag in it. And slag you know, when you're making steel, slag is like a byproduct. It's the nasty stuff that floats to the surface, if I can call it that. Mm. And, you know, if Jim Beckman's listening to this, our former
board chair
and president of Crucible, he's going to be saying, oh, David, you don't know anything about steel, which is true. I know a little bit about steel as being a toolmaker, but slag is what is on the outside edge. And that got into the metal that they used for the rivets. So the rivets failed.
So, you know, cutting corners.
Cutting corners. Yeah. Rushing. Going too fast when you don't need to go too fast. Slow down. Do it right. Mm-hmm. No. A possible wrong turn.
That surprised me. I didn't know that about the Titanic.
And I didn't either. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, what do you mean wrong turn? Well, the Titanic was designed in such a way that it should have been able to turn very quickly. And it had to do with turning a rudder in a certain direction and reversing a certain engine, if I read it right, which to me makes sense, having friends that have some boats big enough to have two engines in it. You actually can turn a boat almost on a dime, if I can call it that, by having one engine. If there's two engines, one in forward, one in reverse, the boat will actually just pivot mm-hmm. on an axis. From what I'm told, I've never done it because I've never driven a boat like that. But so when they gave the command, when they finally saw the iceberg and they gave the command to do, you know, a hard port turn, he first turned starboard into the iceberg. Mm-hmm. And the iceberg took a glancing blow at that forward hull just behind the bow, and it popped the rivets and opened up a hole in the hull. So they made the wrong turn. So you're asking yourself, so the analogy that I see in that in regular industry is, do our people know what to do in an emergency?
Right. Well, and, you know, what kind of training are they receiving? Are they properly trained? Are they poorly trained? Are we cutting corners on development and training and onboarding, things like that?
Exactly. So it was, they maneuvered poorly.
Yeah. And it made a big difference.
It did.
In the outcome.
It was fatal.
Yeah.
For, you know, almost 1,500 people.
Mm-hmm.
The climate in 1912, it was an unusually harsh winter. It stayed very, very cold. And something else happened that in January of that year of 1912, the Earth and the Moon were very, very close to the Sun, which changed the tides and made for much stronger tidal shifts, which probably they believe made it refloated a lot of icebergs that would have been stuck on the coast of Labrador and Newfoundland. So there was going to be many more icebergs than normal, mm-hmm. which kind of makes you wonder. So why wouldn't they have known that, you know? And why wouldn't the captain who knew Edward Smith everything? You know, he was not a young man. He was a good seafaring captain. Didn't pay attention to that because, again, his ship was unsinkable.
And what do you think this relates to in industry? Would you say, like, maybe culture? That's kind of what I was thinking that this reminded me of.
Excuse me. Could be culture. Mm-hmm. Could also be a lack of awareness of the environment that we're operating our business in.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, last week, we used the example of Ford Motor Company, and when Alan Mulally began to hoard cash and borrow as much as he could because he sensed something shifting in the economic structure of the world in 2008, 7 and 8. So the auto industries, the automakers that weren't looking at what might be unusual about the world at that time, he did.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually allowed them to weather the storm without a government bailout. So I think that could be the same type of thing. You know, that why didn't seafaring captains take notice of a climate shift
mm-hmm.
and a tidal shift?
So
they would have known it.
Right, right. It's like knowing your industry and knowing your market.
Knowing your industry, knowing your market. Mm-hmm. Shortage of binoculars.
That's crazy to me.
It was. You know, so now we can't say that it was a direct contributor to the Titanic sinking, but they just said there was confusion in Southampton when they were getting ready to fit the ship for her to make her maiden voyage. And many experts believe that there weren't enough binoculars on board.
Something that's so simple, you know?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. We do get to the worst, what I think is the worst, even worse than avoiding the warnings, mm-hmm. was a shortage of lifeboats.
And why? What was the reason?
They didn't like how cluttered the deck was with all the lifeboats that they were designed to take. They had 20 lifeboats on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
The boat was equipped with 16 davits. A davit is like a crane. There were 8 davits on the port, which is the left side of the ship, and 8 on the starboard, which is the right side. Each davit was designed to handle 4 lifeboats. But they felt that the decks looked too cluttered, so they only took 20.
So it was an ego problem.
An ego problem. Oh, there's no problem. This ship is unsinkable. They probably asked the naval architect, and he says, yeah, no problem. She's unsinkable. Mm-hmm.
Surprise, then we also know that the lifeboats that were used were not used in the most efficient manner.
Exactly. They weren't completely filled, because in the panic, right. everyone is rushing to get into the lifeboats.
Mm-hmm.
So had they even filled all 20 of the lifeboats, they would have only had room for 1,178 people. And we know that approximately... If they would have filled them completely, so if they would have filled all 20 lifeboats completely, they would have had room, for 1,718. The way they used them, they only put 1,178 in them.
Wow.
Or maybe I have a typo in my notes. I don't remember there. But only 70 passengers survived the disaster.
Wow.
Yeah. On a ship that with crew could have held 3,000 people. It was going too fast. The ship was running at 21 knots. Her max, which is about 24 miles an hour, her max speed was 25 knots. So she wasn't going at full speed, but she was going too fast,
mm-hmm.
which made the maneuver tougher. The watertight bulkheads weren't sealed, which they could have been sealed.
Mm-hmm.
They were designed to be closed at any sign of danger. They didn't close them. So there again, she was built with all the things necessary to survive a collision. They just ignored it. So they didn't take the proper safety precautions.
Right.
The Californian, a British steamer, the SS Californian, is thought to have seen the Titanic's distress rocket flares from about 10 miles out, but did not rush in to help. Nobody knows why.
I was just going to ask, do you know why?
Yeah, there was nothing I could find. Now, again, I may have some of these things a little vague, because
mm-hmm.
I just did some quick research about it. But, you know, if you do a search, why did the Titanic sink? That's one of the things that comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Why did so many people die? What went wrong, kind of thing. So then I started looking at how can I pull this into some leadership piece? Why is it that leaders ignore the obvious or ignore the risk or aren't willing to confront reality? And the first thing I came up with was arrogance.
Right.
They just think they know better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've thought too, like I'll sit down with leaders and I'll present the results of a 360 or something, and they don't agree.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they won't even do a 360 because they don't want to know. It's not going to help you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look back on some of my failures, you know, when I was running organizations, and a lot of times it was I was not confronting reality. It'll get better. It'll just, you know, just work a little harder. You know, this isn't as big as we think it is. Excuse me. No, it is. It's going to be really big. You know, thankfully, none of my screw-ups resulted in people dying. I also put a note here of incompetence or ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
They've stopped growing, and then they think they know more than they really do. And it may not, you know, and I'm not saying that's an arrogant piece. I'm just saying it that becomes incompetence.
Right.
You know, where you're just not realizing that you need to be growing every single day. And if you're not, you won't be ready.
Mm-hmm.
I had one more here that I wrote down, fear. They don't know what they don't, that they fear. They don't want to know the truth.
I think that's very common.
Yeah. And so I started wondering, so why, you know, why wouldn't somebody want to know the truth? Well, because, and I'm just, you know, this is just a thought that I'm thinking off the top of my head. I think we live in a world of make-believe.
Mm-hmm.
Think about social media. You know, so, and so with my, I am on social media. So my Facebook account is strictly used for my John Maxwell team communications because we communicate on some specific Facebook pages.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll never post a picture of my family on Facebook. It's just not something I do.
Right.
My Twitter feed is strictly work-related, leadership development, that type of thing. You'll never see me post a picture of my family or you know, you'll never see me make a political comment on Twitter. That's not why I use it.
Mm-hmm.
I use Twitter to post things or to retweet things that I think are beneficial for people. And quite frankly, there's enough opinions on Twitter, they don't need mine. Instagram, however, is where I will put pictures of my family, pictures mm-hmm. of my boat, pictures of fish that I catch. And what cracks me up is when I go to post a picture, it asks me, do I want to filter that picture and make it look better? Well, why would I want to do that? Well, because we live in a world of make-believe.
Right.
And the interesting thing was, so my wife and I went out to my best friend's daughter's wedding. I'm having problems with my grammar there. But anyways, I went out to Phoenix, Arizona because my buddy's daughter was getting married. And we stayed at a house with a couple, with another couple. We actually stayed at my daughter-in-law's parents' house and another couple that we know from California were there. And the husband of that couple, he's an amazing friend and he's also quite a photographer. He loves to take pictures. And so just jokingly, we were talking about changing a picture, you know, because we're getting older. Well, can you make us look younger? And he goes, yeah. I'm like, what? And he pulls up a $19 app on his iPad.
Oh my goodness.
A $19, I'll have to show you when I get home. A $19 app on your iPad that you can literally erase wrinkles,
mm-hmm.
make a person thinner in specific areas. You can enhance these images unbelievably. We live in a world of make-believe.
From a mobile device.
From a mobile device. So the reality is that what's reality?
Mm-hmm.
We're so used to not knowing the truth that we're okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
And as leaders, that can be catastrophic. That, well, you know, it's not that bad. I'd rather not know because mm-hmm. it'll just pass. You know, good things pass, bad things pass, everything passes. Well, it didn't for the passengers on the Titanic. All but 700 of them died. And one of the reasons why so many died was, and I'd mentioned this to you before we started recording, the water temperature off of the coast of Newfoundland was 28 degrees on April 12th.
Wow.
April 14th, excuse me, 1912. That is unbelievable
mm-hmm.
how cold the water still was. And within 2 minutes, you go into shock, between 15 minutes to 28 minutes, or to 45 minutes, excuse me, you're dead. So that's why so many people really, really died. Because when people finally got there, it was too late for a lot of
people.
Right,
they didn't have a chance.
Yeah, and the only other thing that I came up with as to why leaders might be willing to just ignore the truth is they're just too self-confident.
Mm-hmm.
They think that whatever comes, they're going to be able to work their way through it. But yet, a leader's responsibility is to define reality. Because only once we define it, can we prepare organizations for it? Because there is no reason for any of our organizations to go down like the Titanic.
Exactly.
Did you, as you read through my notes, and again, you and I haven't, usually we talk,
mm-hmm.
but since I'm still almost 400 miles away, we haven't had any chance. You know, we shared some emails and a text. That's about it. But did you have any thoughts when you saw this? What were you thinking when you saw my post come?
I was thinking, you know, I really need to watch the Titanic. When it came out, I think it was a PG-13 movie, and I was definitely not 13 yet.
Mom and dad said no.
Good parenting. I really need to brush up on my Titanic
history. So have you ever seen it?
No.
No, neither have I.
I think I've seen like snippets here and there from
it, okay,
but never start to finish. But in all seriousness, I thought it was a great analogy for leadership failure. Because I never thought of it that way, you know? I thought of it as more along the lines of, I mean, obviously it's not a natural disaster, but kind of along that line of just like one of those acts of God kind of things. Yeah. But
and it was,
I guess it was, you know, there are a lot of things that could have been done to have either saved more lives,
right,
prevented it from happening altogether, or made it less catastrophic.
Exactly. You know, the key things, they rushed the construction so they used substandard materials.
Mm-hmm.
He turned in to the iceberg before turning away. The ignoring the warnings, but the worst, didn't have the lifeboats because she didn't look as good.
Yeah.
And it would have left the decks cluttered. Mm-hmm. Well, they had plenty of space on the decks once everything washed off.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just this whole arrogance, ignorance, self-confidence. And that is what always takes a leader down.
Yeah.
I mean, I can say that when I think of leadership failures, what always takes a leader down is arrogance, you know, overly self-confident, and ignoring the signs that are all around them. Mm-hmm. They don't want to deal with reality.
Well, and I think when you have a leader that's ignoring the reality, and it only trickles down to everyone else. But when you have a leader who can accept what is really happening and confront that reality or share the reality of situations with the team, it is, you know, exponentially better than the alternative. Exactly. And it really, exactly, because you get your whole team on board. When everyone is on the same page and knows what is actually going on, you're able to solve problems more efficiently, more creatively, and I think band together. Because when a leader is ignoring the reality, I think there are some team members who are probably also unaware, not at their own fault, but because the leader is. But there are always people who can probably see more clearly and just aren't being led in that way.
Exactly. You know, and so you, by helping them, by helping the team see the reality, you enlist all the creativity of your team.
Mm-hmm.
And the sad part too is there are usually those on the team that see what's happening and they just think you've lost it, mm-hmm, as the leader. And they may be the brightest, most innovative, most articulate. And if it's a slow death, they'll just leave.
Right.
You know, the ones that see what's happening, if they, you know, they'll try to get your attention. If you don't listen, they'll go. Mm-hmm. And they're absolutely the ones you can't afford to lose.
Mm-hmm.
So, leaders, wake up, smell the coffee, look yourself in the mirror, define reality, and head into it. You know, that's the other thing that really struck me was the Titanic. She was designed that if she would have, with good rivets, and maybe even with bad rivets, if she would have hit the iceberg head on, she would have been fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I do know this, that, you know, even from the boating that I do on, those lifeboats were bigger than the boats that I go out in. But anyways.
Wow.
Boats are designed to head into the storm,
mm-hmm,
not away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And every leader needs to know that. Well, that's kind of a profound
thing
to end my podcast on.
I know. What do I say to that?
You just head into the storm. You know, buckle up the hatches, close, mm-hmm, everything down, put your life jackets on and head into the storm, and you're, mm-hmm, going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the storm's over, we can figure out how far off course we are.
Yeah. But
that's a navigation topic for another day.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to ask me what we're talking about next week, and I'm going to tell you, I have no idea.
I'm sure you'll strike inspiration.
It will come before next week. How's that?
Great.
So with that, I'm Dave Freund.
I'm Marissa Norcross.
And this was The Next Page.